in the KSRO kitchen. I am Steve Garner, and across from me is everyone's best friend, Chef John Ash.
Good morning. True?
I think so. Okay. I think people feel a real kinship to you and a connection with you for 38 years on the air and John Ash and Company Restaurant and all your award-winning books and how much you've contributed to people eating better and more sanely. So thank you for all of that.
Yeah, well, thanks.
I just got back from Chicago.
I know. What'd you do?
Oh, my gosh. We ate. We were there for family affair, high school graduation for a grandson.
So what was the most memorable meal you had?
Ooh, that's a tough one. That is a really tough one. I'll just go through with some of the highlights, okay? We did not have a classic Chicago hot dog.
Oh, well, and what's the other one? The Chicago?
Well, the Italian beef.
Well,
I'm going to talk about that. Okay. But the Chicago hot dog, when we go to Chicago, we like to get foods that we don't get around here.
Yeah.
And actually, you can get a pretty good representation of a Chicago hot dog. It's not rocket science, actually. And
where
we go, out at the Bodega Bay at the Doghouse.
Oh.
That's the best one. The guy that founded it 35 years ago was from Chicago. He's since passed away. But the new owner, she's kept the tradition alive. And they make a great rendition of the Chicago hot dog. It's a poppy seed roll with mustard, onions, relish, tomatoes, sport peppers, pickle spear, and celery salt. And they do a great job with it.
So, I never knew that.
Yeah, it's a lovely spot out there. You can look at the water.
Well, I never knew that's what a Chicago hot dog was.
And that's it. And my brother is a big fan of the hot dog. He doesn't bother when he goes to Chicago to try to traipse through. He gets one at O'Hare at the airport. And actually, they do a very good rendition at O'Hare and Midway airports. They know they're not going to fool anybody. Even the tourist kind of knows what a Chicago hot dog should be. So we didn't bother with that. But we did have, of course, deep dish pizza. I don't care. You're not going to get anywhere else except really Chicago with a caramelized cheese crust, which is just beautiful. It's a true deep dish pizza. And I know it's the least understood, and there's a lot of controversy about who makes the best, and I'm not here to tell you who the best is. If you want
but
to
do
know,
you have a recommendation?
I do, but I want to recommend one thing. There's a guy that's terrific named Steve Dolinsky. He's been around Chicago for 40 years writing about food, and he's written, to me, the definitive book. I got it for my birthday last year called Pizza City USA, 101 Reasons Why Chicago is America's Greatest Pizza Town. And he breaks down all the styles of pizza. Look, full-color photos of every pizza place he visited in the Chicago area and ranks them from best to save your money.
Oh, that's great.
So really, if you're going to go to Chicago and you're going to do a pizza crawl, Pizza City USA by Steve Dolinsky, you need to be taking this book with you.
So Chicago pizza is thick crust.
It's a thick crust pizza. Now, tavern style is very popular also. That's the thin crust style, and many people will argue that that's the Chicago pizza. But for me, it's really deep dish, and we like to go to a place called Pequot's. P-E-Q-U-O-D, Pequot's Pizza. It's been around for probably 30 years or so, founded by a guy named Bert Katz, K-A-T-Z, and they make a great rendition. Others will tell you there's better deep dish pizza. Mm. Steve Dolinsky likes Pequot's a lot, but he'll tell you there's several others that he feels are better in his book.
So what are the traditional toppings, or are they for Chicago pizza?
It's pretty much cheese, pepperoni, and sausage.
Okay.
So that's pretty. I mean, some people do spinach. I'm not a big fan of spinach. Some people put sport peppers, jardinera on the top of their pizza, which is great too. But you can't go wrong with Pequot's.
And you brought me one, didn't you?
No, I'm sorry. I keep promising John to bring him one. But it never works out for my flights. We had an early morning flight.
No, I'm teasing.
But I'm going to keep promising you that.
We'll have to go together.
Now, here's something I've not talked about, and that is Saganaki. You know Saganaki?
Yeah, I do.
Guess where it originated? Chicago.
Chicago, in Greektown.
In Greektown, yes, that's absolutely true. In the late 1960s or so. So it's been around 55 years ago. And actually a place called the Parthenon. Perfect. And it's no longer available. But my spouse and I had Saganaki twice. We went to two different Greek restaurants. One did a version of it. The other one did it the right way, using a platter of sheep's milk cheese, and then...
Okay, so talk about what it is.
Well, it's flaming. It's flaming cheese. And then you have to yell, "Opa! Opa!" while you light it on fire. And it's great. It's a fabulous hors d'oeuvre appetizer. And our grandson always orders it when he goes out. So Saganaki, okay. flaming cheese. Make sure you get that. Italian beef. Well, again, you want to start an argument? Start talking about your favorite Italian beef place. But it's been around since the 1950s, early 60s, and our favorite place is Al's Italian Beef. Others will tell you Johnny's, others will give you, forget about all those places. go to Al's, and I'll tell you what we started doing. We don't use the bread anymore. We get the big Al, the big beef, and we get a pint of au jus on the side, the gravy. Because the best deal is taking that beef and dipping it into the au jus and eating it that way.
So is it kind of a French dip? I mean,
actually,
is that the
kind
idea?
Of, yes, very similar to a French dip. Why bother filling up on all this balloon bread? It's not worth it. And we don't get peppers anymore. A lot of people get the peppers, but we figure, we don't need that either. Fries, the best fries in Chicago, and an Al's Italian Beef, you're going to be happy camper.
So is there more than one Al's?
Now it's franchised.
Ah.
There's several more in Chicago. We've eaten at them. Not as good as the mothership. Yeah. Do you know how that is?
Yeah.
The one on Taylor, which is near the University of Chicago, the original one in Italiantown. It's been there for 50 years. That's the one you want to go to. Fight the traffic. Don't complain. Just do it. Another one, Shrimp Dijon, which is a very famous Chicago dish. We don't get it when we're there because we make it at home. It was invented in Chicago. Or it's been around for 100 years. It's shrimp. It's garlic. It's breadcrumbs and wine or sherry. It's a casserole. It's easy to do with some parsley.
And it's called Shrimp Dijon.
D-E-J-O-N-G-H-E.
Oh, so it's not Dijon, the mustard.
No, it's different. That's a great dish. And if you don't make that type of dish and you're in Chicago, go to one of the places that offer it. It's terrific. Another one is Chicken Vesuvio, which we make at home. But again, the Chicken Vesuvio, we've started it. Where else? Vesuvio Restaurant. It's long gone. But it's simple Italian-American fare. It's basically chicken breast, sautéed in garlic and oregano and olive oil and wine, then baked until the skin is crispy, and wonderful seasoned roast potatoes and peas. Have to have peas.
Really?
Oh, I'm sorry, but you have to.
No,
I
don't mean to laugh.
Well, you did laugh, but there's great renditions of it. But now some people will say, forget the peas. I say no. You have to have those wonderful peas sprinkled into the end just to cook. And then for dessert, a rainbow cone. Mm. Ever heard of the rainbow cone shop?
No.
Well, it's been around for probably 90 years in Chicago. And my wife used to go years ago when she was growing up. But we have not been. It's on the south side of Chicago. And it's been there for 90 plus years. And the namesake dessert's a combination of orange sherbet with chocolate, strawberry, and vanilla, and walnuts, and pistachio ice cream. And it's swirled together into this cone.
A soft serve?
It's a soft serve, but it's magnificent. There's nothing else like it. The problem is, where we were staying in Chicago, it's over an hour drive.
Oh.
That's how vast Chicago is to get to the other side of town. But we've promised ourselves the next visit to Chicago, we're going to go to the Rainbow Cone and get the original dessert.
That's a great idea.
Don't you think?
I want one.
Refreshing on a summer's evening. So that was our quick trip to Chicago. Oh, and I have to mention a couple other things. Perch. You don't get perch out of the Midwest. Fresh lake perch. So we went twice to our favorite seafood place in Chicago called the Boston Seafood Market, owned by a Greek fisherman who started this about 15, 20 years ago. They have both a retail operation, a wholesale operation, and two restaurants. They move over 125,000 pounds of fish a week. It's a lot of fish. Mm. And they do fresh perch that's grilled and in butter that's magnificent. They also do it deep fried. And of course, they've got about 20 different fish on the menu. But the only place you're going to get fish and whitefish, these type of Midwestern fish, or when you go to the Midwest. So Wisconsin has a lot of perch fries and perch, but in Chicago, it's become very popular. So we always get perch dinner in Chicago. And also a salad dressing, which you never see anywhere outside of Chicago and the Midwest, is creamy garlic salad dressing. You'd never see it on any menu outside of Chicago. So we always get a chopped salad with creamy garlic salad dressing. And no one sells it retail. There's no bottled creamy garlic.
Isn't that interesting?
We've looked all around. We've gone online. We've asked restaurateurs. Said, no, unless you want to buy a half gallon. And we said, well, we'll sell you. You want to buy a half gallon? Because that's how we buy it. We said, well, half gallon, I don't know, 64 ounces of salad dressing. We're going to pack that in our suitcase.
Yeah.
Right. So we have made it successfully at home. And my Mrs. Garner does a really well, excellent, excellent rendition. But we have learned, we've tried to avoid things like corn syrup. But I tell you, for the consistency of this dressing, it really does need corn syrup. Mm. So we use corn syrup. You know, sometimes corn syrup gives that viscosity to certain dressings that you can't really get. I think people said, oh, you can use other things. Well, we've tried other things, but those other things haven't quite worked. So that was my trip to Chicago. Today, John and I, and we hope you'll celebrate along with us, is National Hazelnut Day. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some great John Ash hazelnut recipes. It's the KSRO Good Food Hour. At 11:30, we're going to be chatting with Matt Rudbard, whose new book, Korea World, a cookbook, is one wild ride.
Yes.
Sonoma County's News Talk, KSRO, on FM at 103.5 in Santa Rosa and Windsor, 96.9 in Petaluma, and 94.5 in Sonoma at KSRO.com and on the KSRO app.
Chernoff Cosmetic Surgery in Santa Rosa has been taking excellent care of patients for over 30 years.
There's such a difference between doing things to people and taking good care of patients. And I've been blessed in my practice to be surrounded by people who know the difference.
Dr. Chernoff likes to use the term your natural best when advising patients on what procedures to have.
Our nicest compliment is always to create their aesthetic improvement such that no one ever knows that they've had it done. And that means creating a natural appearance, never a done appearance, never a pulled appearance.
He not only trains doctors and nurses nationwide, but also ensures his staff receives training to the same high standards.
I am proud to be referred to as a pioneer in the field of aesthetics because we have been deeply involved in the research and development of many techniques, both non-surgical and surgical.
Check the specials and services at ChernoffCosmeticSurgery.com.
The Petaluma East Side Market at Lucchese Park is open every Tuesday, 10 to 1:30. Create your own healthy farm-to-table meals. Chicken, lamb, and beef available from the local farmers and ranchers, including Buffus Springs Ranch in Petaluma. Get Petaluma cheeses from Acadena Cheese. Pick up baked goods from Redbird or Bedstone Bakery, Revolution Bread, The Bakery, and Hillsburg Bagel Company. Grab seasonal vegetables from Sonoma County local Ortiz Family Farm. Sunray Farm has certified organic produce and flowers from Sonoma Valley. The Peach Guy offers small-scale walnuts and citrus from Winters. Fresh spring flowers are abundant. Have lunch or dinner from Chad's Soup Shack, What a Chicken, Belfair, The Green Grocer, Tacos Don Pepe, Holy Chili Mole, and Chava's Pizza. Grab a drink from Myriad Coffee and Bai Chai Boba Tea. You'll also find artisans and crafters with candles, jewelry, and so much more. Order online for curbside shopping service. More info at ilovefarmersmarkets.org.
At American Ag Credit, we know agriculture is changing in ways we only imagined, and we'll be here to help you navigate the road ahead for the continued success of your operations and community. American Ag Credit has the treasury management products that keep your operation moving, ensuring your money works as hard as you do. Backed by a team of dedicated experts, we provide custom solutions for management of your working capital. For more information, visit agloan.com/success. American Ag Credit, your future grows here.
Did you know you can take the SMART train to fly out of the Charles M. Schultz Sonoma County Airport from as far south as Larkspur? Now you can fly to any one of 11 destinations with train-to-plane convenience from Petaluma, Novato, San Rafael. With quick and easy check-in and on-site parking, it's the smart way to fly. Skip the Bay Area traffic. Take the SMART train to the Charles M. Schultz Sonoma County Airport and book your next trip at flysts.com. Flysts.com.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
KSRO Kitchen. Well, I didn't really know this, but it is National Hazelnut Day.
Isn't every day something national?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
But after all these years, some 38 years, we haven't celebrated National Hazelnut Day. And although it's only been an observance since 2007, and I'm sure the Nutella people had something to do with this. Because they consume 25% of the world's hazelnut crop.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Isn't that an astounding statistic? Yeah. And they're actually on February 5th, by the way. There's a National Nutella Day. Yeah. So you have another chance to, if you miss today, then you can wait till February. So you have a great fondness and love of hazelnuts, don't you?
Well, I do. Partly because they're kind of local. There's a big industry of hazelnuts that are grown in Oregon. So if you happen to go up to Oregon, and also at farm stands down in California, too, you can find hazelnuts.
I didn't know they grew in California also, but Oregon's the biggest producer of hazelnuts in the U.S., producers.
But the biggest of all, the granddaddy of them.
Turkey,
yeah.
I couldn't believe
it.
I wonder why. I would have thought Italy. Well, Italy's in second place. But Turkey grows 70% of the world's crop, Italy 20%, and the rest of the U.S. and some other places, too. Spain, I think, grows hazelnuts, too. But you have a couple of recipes that we're posting this morning on the KSRO website featuring hazelnuts. And the first one is Duca, which is
Duca.
Oh, like a duck, like a quack.
It can be Duca. It's because the... it's famous in New Zealand. They put it on everything. It's I don't know what it is, but its roots are Egyptian.
You said you first had it in South Africa.
And in South Africa, yeah.
So it's a condiment. What would you call it? A spice blend?
It's I don't know what you'd call it. You could they put it on everything. Put it on meat, put it on vegetables. I mean, I guess a condiment would be a good description.
And a dip.
Yeah.
You can dip it or put it on, like you said, meats or fish.
Yeah, I beat it into butter. It's fantastic.
Well, you're quite fond of it.
Yeah.
And it uses 1 cup of almonds and hazelnuts for the blend, along with sesame, coriander seeds, cumin, salt, a little sugar, and pepper. So you would roast these nuts first and then chop them up to bring out the flavor. And then toast the seeds. I know you always toast your seeds, don't you? Coriander and sesame in a pan, and then or in an oven, and then with a spice grinder. You have a dedicated spice grinder?
No, he's a coffee grinder.
Oh, I thought people said, "Oh, you never mix the two."
No. Who are those people?
Not you. And you grind the coriander, and then with the nuts and the sesame seeds, and it'll keep, I guess, for a while, won't it?
It'll keep for several months as long as you keep it airtight. And it's a good idea to put it in the refrigerator. Well, it's like any nut, you know, because they're high in fat. The fat will go rancid. So you want to be careful. But you can make a big batch of it. And
I love these. I love it.
Can I tell you, I was thinking about it, and I thought, well, where did I do this? And I did years ago, years and years and years ago, a special dinner, I guess is what you call it, at, what's in Chico, what's the famous?
The Chico Nut Festival?
No. What's the famous brewer there?
Oh, I don't remember, but you went to brewery.
It's the most famous, it's the original craft brewer in America.
Oh, okay.
Was there.
Not New Albion.
No, not. Oh, gosh. Why can't I remember?
It'll come to us. And you did Duca there?
I did a dish that, and then we gave everybody a little pint jar.
Oh, how wonderful. I remember you had talked about Duca the first time for the Chico Nut Festival. You had contributed a recipe.
Yeah, this could have been that.
It could have been that. Oh, and Chico, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay. The other one is a pappardelle with hazelnut cream.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a wild idea.
Yeah.
With some
Nuts are used often with pasta sauces. You know, walnuts especially. The Italians love walnuts and other kinds of nuts that are put in there, pine nuts.
I love this idea. Combined hazelnuts, garlic, and the food processor. You add some cream, some marsala,
a
little Parmesan Reggiano, olive oil, chili flakes.
It's really simple.
And a little cocoa.
Yeah.
that's an interesting addition. Yeah. And then process, and then cook the pasta, and then melt a little butter, add the noodles, and there you have it.
And the sauce.
And then hazelnut biscotti. I think that's what most people kind of think about when they think about hazelnuts. It's a double bake, or what's, what's this?
Well, that's what biscotti are.
Double bake, biscotti.
You make them as a cookie first, and then you bake them again to get them crisp and crunchy.
There's some good biscotti, and there's some lousy biscotti out there.
Well,
there?
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of the commercial biscotti. It was like your conversation about foods in Chicago. It's like the people who try to copy those age-old things, they're just not very good.
They're not.
Biscotti are one of those. A lot of the commercial biscotti are really terrible, and they're actually so easy to make yourself.
So go ahead and do them, and will they keep for a while in an airtight container?
Yeah, because they're dry.
They're dry. So it's pretty easy. Butter, hazelnut. Oh, you hazelnut liqueur or brandy.
If you want.
That's a nice idea. And the eggs, hazelnuts, lemon zest, flour, baking powder. Pretty daggone easy.
Yeah. You form them into a log. You bake the log. And then you take it out. And then you bake it again. And then you slice them into the little strips that we think of as being biscotti.
I love it. All these recipes, you can celebrate National Hazelnut Day with John Ash by just going online to the KSRO Good Food Hour webpage and choose a recipe. Hey, make all three.
What was interesting, because you mentioned it, I tried to see if I could find a Turkish hazelnut recipe, and I couldn't.
Maybe they export them all.
I know.
Oh, and one more quick recipe. We're not posting this one, but you did a great recipe for a raw asparagus salad with aged Gouda and hazelnuts, which you did for Fine Cooking Magazine probably 25 years ago, and it was wonderful. The vinaigrette was rice vinegar, lemon juice, olive oil, little honey, shallots, and the asparagus with arugula, and then toasted, peeled, and chopped hazelnuts, and then some shaved Gouda.
Yeah.
Simple salad to put together, but I thought that was really inspirational. We'll take a break and we'll come back and we're going to talk about Korean food. It's the KSRO Good Food Hour with me, Steve Garner, and Chef John Ash.
Sonoma County's News Talk, KSRO, on FM at 103.5 in Santa Rosa and Windsor, and now at 96.9 in Petaluma.
Simpson Sheet Metal is helping kids in our community to become million-word readers through Read on Sonoma. This year, 1,100 elementary students in 6 local schools are participating, earning prizes as they read. And Simpson Sheet Metal is proud to be a part of it. Here's Barbie Simpson, owner of Simpson Sheet Metal.
One of the things I cherish most in my life is my grandkids. Spending time with them gives me such great joy. Over the years, reading with them has evolved. Now, we read their school books and their weekly vocabulary words along with chapter books. As they've grown, I've seen their reading skills and comprehension increase, along with their interest in the world around them. Being a grandparent is one of the greatest joys of my life.
Lifetime outcomes for children who learn to read and build comprehension include better health, higher income, and increased graduation rates. Simpson Sheet Metal and Read on Sonoma, dedicated to improving children's lives in Sonoma County. ReadOnSonoma.org.
It's personal, and it's your choice. You've contemplated cosmetic surgery for a long time. Maybe it's cosmetic breast surgery, a reduction, lift, or augmentation. Or maybe you wanted smart lipo body contouring for a long time. Dr. Tom and his caring staff understand your concerns are personal and confidential.
It is personal. We take our time and walk you through the whole process. Our philosophy, you, the patient, are part of the surgical team. That's why we include you in the decision-making process.
How do I get started?
It's easy. Just call our office. Our wonderful surgical liaison will listen to your concerns and arrange for a virtual or in-office consultation.
Dr. Tom, you use local anesthesia for cosmetic surgery?
Yes. Local anesthesia is safe and well-tolerated by our patients. You can actually have breakfast the day of your surgery, and you will appreciate the quicker recovery with less discomfort.
Voted best cosmetic surgeon of Sonoma County 8 years in a row. Call Dr. Tom for a complimentary consultation online at drtomcosmetic.com.
Hi, I'm Patty Manett, manager of the Healdsburg branch at Exchange Bank. Busy running your small business? Exchange Bank's got you covered. We'll come to you for a personalized meetup to dive into your banking needs. Whether it's a line of credit, a business loan, or top-tier merchant services, your small business success is our priority at Exchange Bank. Contact a local branch today. Learn more at exchangebank.com.
Exchange Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. All loans subject to credit approval.
I'm KSRO's Dale Trucios with Sonoma County's most accurate, most dependable forecast. High 85 today in Santa Rosa, 62 along the coast with sunny skies. Wind gusts over 20 miles an hour inland, up to 40 along the shores. Few clouds for tonight, low 54 degrees. Similar for tomorrow, 84 in Santa Rosa, 64 on the coast with sunny skies. Then 80 for Monday with some clouds, and then mid-90s for Tuesday. Depend on weather every 30 minutes. On FM News Talk, 103.5 and 96.9, KSRO.
Steve Garner and Chef John Ash in the KSRO Kitchen. Good morning, listeners. Welcoming you to our 38th year on the air, America's longest running radio food show. Matt Rudbard was with us about a year or two ago for his book, Food IQ. Matt's a writer, editor, author of lots of food and culture books with more than 20 years of experience, TV, magazines, book publishing, online media. And he's also the founding editor of online food and culture magazine, Taste. Winner of two James Beard Awards. Writing has appeared in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Travel, Leisure, Bon Appetit, Savour, and GQ. A couple of years ago, he wrote a wonderful book called Koreatown. And he's followed this book up with Chef Dookie Hong by his latest release, just came out last month, called Korea World, a cookbook. Good morning, Matt, and thanks for joining John and me this morning.
Steve, what an amazing introduction. How kind of you guys. And also, thank you for the Chicago pizza talk. I got takes. I have lots of takes.
Well, you know, I take issue with Matt because if I remember correctly, Matt, when we had you on, you revealed that you were a native Wisconsin. Am I correct?
I went to college in Wisconsin. I'm native West Michigan, actually. So I'm just over the lake from Chicago. My dad grew up on the north side. So
okay,
I love Chicago.
But Matt is an aficionado of tavern-style pizza, yeah. I think I recall from the book.
You got it. I love tavern. But I also have to say, Millie's Pizza in the Pan is my pick. It's more of a pan, but up in Uptown, that's the spot. Millie's Pizza in a Pan, that's my guy.
We'll have to have Matt back and talk pizza at another time.
Yeah.
So Korea World, that you do with San Francisco-based chef Dookie Hong, the first book, Korea Town, was a bestseller. It did fabulously, and you followed it up with this new release, Korea World. John, you had a comment about the photography.
Well, the photography, it's kind of like the book. There have been books about Korean food and all of that stuff, which kind of focused on traditional approaches to it. I mean, the things that a lot of us are familiar with. It's not that I'm any expert on Korean cooking, but the photography was an example also of how sprightly the book is. The pictures were not Martha Stewart at all. You know, things were I love them because things are draped over the side. There are pictures of people eating, there are all of that stuff, but contemporary.
Yeah, there's an energy, and John used the word kinetic, that he said this is a book of photography for a whole new generation of cookbooks
and for a whole new generation of photographers.
I'm so happy you plug into that, and really credit goes to Alex Lau, our photographer, who was with us for 3 years while we were reporting on this book, which covers modern Korean food for the first time in the English language. Alex is a Bay Area local, grew up on the Outer Sunset, so I have to give him a shout out, Alex Lau. But yeah, I'm glad you clued in on that.
So could you just encapsulate within a minute or so of how this explosion of Korean food came about?
Absolutely. You know, this is not a sequel at all. We write it in the book. This is about the biggest story of modern food today, which is Korean food rise in America, but also the different iterations we're seeing in Korea. So the first two-thirds of the book is based in Korea, and we're traveling all over the country. We're in modern Seoul. We're up in Gangwon-do, down in Jeju Island. And then, of course, we come back, and we spend a lot of time in the United States. What's happened with Korean food since we did our first book, Koreatown, over a decade ago, is extraordinary. I mean, we are seeing these flavors, you know, rise from the baseline level of knowledge from Korean barbecue and kimchi tacos to so many different areas and facets. And it has to, I have to say, it links up with this rise in Korean culture in the world. K-pop is the biggest music. I was in a CVS in the middle of Wisconsin last week, and they were playing K-pop. You know, two Oscars have been given to Korean directors and actors in the past 3 years. So this story is not just about the food, but the culture. And for a country of only 50 million people the size of Indiana, it is extraordinary how much influence Korean food has had in the world. So Korea World, our book, picks up on the story where we left in Koreatown and really covers the modern machinations of Korean food around the world.
Well, you mentioned how influential Korean culture, music, cinema, fashion in general has been. One of my favorite on Netflix series is Extraordinary Attorney Woo, which we've watched from the beginning. And that introduced me to a whole different idea about Korean culture and also Korean food. Also, I didn't realize this, but another Netflix on feature, Squid Game, is the most watched Netflix show of all time.
Yeah, and you see the food in Attorney Woo. I mean, Kimbap is at the center of that show. And it's a great example. If you pick up our book, we have three kimbap recipes, you know, from Dookie's mind. And Dookie is a great, I have to mention, of course, Dookie Hong, my co-author, is a Bay Area chef. So your listeners will be familiar with the Sunday Hospitality group that he runs and Neighbor Bake Shop in the Dog Patch. But really, we clued in on this rise in Korean culture. And these little hints of Korean food and pop culture, we couldn't ignore that. So it's a great point. I love Attorney Woo. It's a great show.
This is the first cookbook I can recall, Matt, that actually gives a shout out to airline food. Talk about Korean airlines.
Yeah, and it's 100% unsponsored. So, you know, Korean Airlines is listening. You could sponsor us. That's a joke. If you fly to Korea or if you fly Korean Airlines and go to other parts of Asia, you may encounter this bibimbap, which, you know, you have to order it. You're going to Korea, man. You got to order bibimbap. But what we thought was, you know, this, the gochujang sauce appears in a tube alongside minute rice and namul and a little bit of bulgogi. So for us, the sauce was super interesting. So it's not just gochujang. That's untrue. It's actually what we, with our recipe in the book, it's more of a roasted gochujang sauce. So it's got a lot of beef in there, beef, ground beef, gochujang. It's got a little bit of sesame oil, garlic. And, you know, you're cooking it down, you're kind of caramelizing the sugars, and you're making the sauce that we, you know, can stick in your fridge for a week. And we love having the sauce around to put on bibimbap. And we actually give the real endorsement to buy that minute rice that you get at H Mart. There's nothing wrong with using that microwavable minute rice, especially for folks who don't have a rice cooker. You know, you totally can do it and use this incredible sauce. You can buy all the panchans at H Mart or any of the markets that you buy your Korean side dishes at. And we just thought that this was kind of we were like leveling up a little bit of our creativity from the first book with this idea that, you know, Korean Airlines inspired us to make this recipe. That's what I'm saying.
That's great. We know about H Mart. I've visited that number of times in San Francisco, but I wasn't familiar with this other market that you recommended for us Bay Area folks, and that's Queens Market. Talk about that.
So it's such a great place, and since we published the book, Queens is now an online-only database of products. So it was a brick-and-mortar when we shot with them, but you get a beautiful story, and in the book we have many profiles of chefs around the world. We call them citizens of Korea World, and they're the folks that really tell the story, and if you pick up Korea World, our book, you're kind of reading all these wonderful stories, and they're one of them, and they kind of came to SF, from fine dining and from e-com world, and they started making these amazing dishes. Gilgari toast was something that they had done at the restaurant that we were really inspired by, so we did our own version of that. And really, I love, if you need Korean products or you're local in the Bay Area, you can pick it up locally at many shops. They have the best pancake mix, a pre-made pancake mix. So Queens Market pancake mix is super good.
What do you like to use that pancake mix in, Matt?
Well, we have a recipe for hamupajeon, which is the seafood pancake. And really, I like using that mix. you know, you can certainly make your own, sift your own, and use flour and rice flour and all that. But like, if you get a great premix, you can add like bits of squid and scallions, put in some peppers. And really for us, I love having a pajun or a jun next to like an example, like tenjun jjigae, which is the beefy tenjun stew that you can make 10, 15 minutes on the stovetop. To me, you've got hummus pajun, you've got tenjun jjigae together. Those two items are a perfect meal, and we have both recipes in the book.
So if somebody is unfamiliar with Korean food but think they want to give it a try, where would you start?
Absolutely, John. That's a good question. I think right now we're at a great point in American home cooking. I think your listeners can realize post-pandemic, we've all cooked so much over the past 4 or 5 years. So we really approached the book. We think a lot of these recipes are so doable. We love that they're stovetop recipes. Lots of items that are made in under 30 minutes, and many of our recipes are less than a page. Mm-hmm. I mean, I got to say, like, duck galbi is a really cool example that isn't as commonly known, and it's kind of like a Korean hamburger, but it's seasoned in a way unlike like an 80-20 like thing you're going to do on the grill, very light seasoning. I know, John, that's probably how you make your burger, but on ours, we're adding this great mix of beef and garlic scallions. We're doing ginger, soy sauce, sugar, mirin, sesame oil. It's like this beautiful marinade or sauce that creates that kind of comes up in the pan when you're cooking it down. And to us, we think that's a great gateway to Korean food. Is the duck galbi, it's called.
I gotta make it.
Yeah.
It's really easy. And honestly, you can do it in the summertime instead of doing the burger, or you could do half of your burgers are just the hamburger, like 80-20s, and then you half the duck galbi. And I tell you, if you have a grill outside and you're making duck galbi, your neighbors are going to be like, why is there a Korean restaurant next to me right now? It's going to smell so great. I love cooking these flavors on the grill.
So coffee is important in Korea, which I didn't realize that an appreciation and understanding of good coffees.
I was amazed. You said like 15,000 high-end coffee shops now around Korea.
Isn't that remarkable? And I love that you pick up on this point. It's a really excellent point. So with Korea World, the idea was to think about modern Korea. We weren't going through the canon of Korean recipes because we did that with our first book, Koreatown. And our main goal was to not duplicate recipes. So really part of this story is the rise of third wave coffee shops in Korea. Now, I've been going to Seoul for the past 12 years. And I tell you, when I first started going to Seoul, the best coffee you could get was a Nescafe push button coffee in the hotel. And truly, you know, in the Bay Area, Napa, you guys have the best coffee culture in the country. And so you understand what a good pour over a V60 is and what good roasting is. And I got to tell you, we wrote about it in the book. We have a V60 recipe. We have an espresso tonic recipe with an orange syrup. And for us, this was an important story. If you go to Seoul, you're going to see these amazing small coffee shops with these delicately roasted coffees, and really, it's outstanding. You know, Japan has well been regarded as the leader in Asia for coffee, and rightly so. Beautiful coffees in Japan, but honestly, if you're going to Korea, you're finding, you know, Ethiopian coffees from, you know, the Guji region of Ethiopia, done with the lightest touch, and the baristas, I tell you, are better than anywhere I've seen in America. There's a real craftsmanship to the coffees, and really this is such a sea change. It's been less than a decade when, back to the Nescafe, all it was Americanos and Nescafe. No one was thinking about origin. And so this is part of Korea. It's not a monoculture. It's not just barbecue. It's a modern food culture and society. And honestly, part of Korea World and the narrative is telling these stories.
Pickled vegetables, I was going to ask you that, but John, you have a question.
I was just going to mention that the book is also, it's a great travel log. You have a section in there called The 17 Best Things We Ate in Seoul and Around Korea, and you list them. And that could be a hit list for dining pleasures while one is visiting Korea.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. It's truly one of my favorite parts of the book was to list these. Did you have one that came to mind that you were like, wow, I want to go there?
Yeah, it was the big boy kalbi rib and all the sauces. I thought, I have to go get that, which is
insane. It's a great, we have that recipe in the book. So here's the story. It's an amazing story. So Mangtan Barbecue, we consider it kind of like the Peter Lugers of Korea. Uh-huh. They're really doing, even though it's not that old, it actually has an aesthetic of old school Korea and Korean modern history. It's like represents the 60s and 70s. But we found that in this restaurant, they're taking giant beef ribs, and instead of it being grilled directly, it's being smoked in the dining room in this glass box. It's being smoked with hay. And to us, that's such a change in Korean culture. It's almost like Texas barbecue has entered the picture in Korea.
Yeah.
And we really think about that with this recipe, where you can take like your big green egg or any of your smokers that you have, take like a giant Kalbi rib, you can get at Whole Foods, anywhere you buy great meat. And really, we have a very light marinade. Instead of it being like a long marinade, it's a very light marinade, but it still is a very classic Kalbi marinade. We marinate it, we smoke it, and then we finish it on the grill. And on the side, one thing that came to mind, we saw a kimchi granita on the table.
Wow.
And that's a recipe we have as well.
Yeah.
So it's kimchi granita that's sitting there with your punch, and you obviously have to eat it right away. But we think of like crushed ice and these kimchi juices. You scoop them with all the other like kimchi, beju kimchi, wow, all the namuls, the fish cakes, and then you got your granita and you got your kalbi rib. You can put together a really cool meal.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back, Matt. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the ghosts of Gwangju and the Buddhist temple cuisine,
yes,
which was really wild,
yeah,
the southwest corner of Korea, which many say is the best food in Korea. And then the next chapter, the island of pork and tangerines and seafood featuring the female divers,
yeah,
that dive for seafood. All this in Matt and Dookie's new book called Korea World, a cookbook. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash, in the KSRO kitchen.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kilmeade. Please join me weekday mornings from 9 till noon for the Brian Kilmeade Show.
If we don't talk about it, how are we going to fix it?
On Sonoma County's FM News Talk, KSRO.
Hi, it's Dennis from the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market at Luther Burbank Center. I'd like to talk a bit about our market. Sure, we have great coffee, crepes, salsa, sausage, fruits, veggies, crafts, and much, much more. But to me, it's what you can't buy that makes the market special, and that's the people. You may have heard me speak with Steve on Saturday mornings on Garden Talk about buying potatoes from Tom or mushrooms from Barbara, forgetting to mention their business names. This is due to the relationships developed with those who grow the food we eat, something you can't get at the big supermarket chains. The vendors are a great resource to help create the perfect meal for you and your family. Bring your kids, grab a bite and something to drink, and shop the farmers market voted the best farmers market in Sonoma County 2 years running in the Press Democrats Readers Poll. We've been doing this for 50 years. We must be doing something right. So come and visit us at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 to 1.
The best-kept secret in Sonoma County? The fries at Superburger? Maybe. But probably the best-kept secret is the Robert Ferguson Observatory off Highway 12 above Kenwood. It's called RFO, and the 200 gifted volunteer docents teach astronomy to kids and adults most every week of the year. Ever heard of a star party? There are 14 of them each year. Three magnificent hands-on telescopes plus classroom presentations. RFO is just 25 minutes from downtown Santa Rosa, but a universe away. June's a great month to visit RFO. Saturdays, June 8th and 29th, a public star party from 9 to midnight. And Saturday, June 22nd is Family Day, starting at 12:30 in the afternoon. Meteor shower to eclipse and everything in between. A calendar of events is as close as RFO.org. Let's take RFO off the best kept secret list. Go to RFO.org and see how much out of this world you're missing. RFO.org.
Steve Garner and Chef John Ash in the
Are you the parent of a 2 to 7 year old? Listen closely for an exciting free radio offer. By now, you've probably heard of ABC Mouse, the Parents' Choice Award-winning online learning program that's actually changing the lives of early learners everywhere.
ABC Mouse is like a little one-on-one teacher. It has helped her so much.
Right now, we're offering a special radio promo to try it free for a month. But you have to go to abcmouse.com/radio to claim your free month. That's abcmouse.com/radio.
Sponsored by Age of Learning.
At Heffernan Insurance, we extend our heartfelt gratitude to our incredible community and employees. Thanks to you, we've clinched the 2024 North Bay Biz Award for Best Insurance Brokerage. This achievement testifies to our collective effort and commitment to excellence. Thank you from Heffernan Insurance.
In the KSRO kitchen is Matt Rudbard joining John Ash and me. His new book, along with Chef Dookie Hong, is Korea World, a cookbook. John, you had a chance to experience temple cuisine, but
well,
in Japan.
Well, it was interesting to see. I assume that because Buddhism is so important in Korea as well as Japan, that there would have been a tradition of that there. But you talk very specifically about it and label it the best food in Korea.
Yeah, it's so true. You know, John, it's a big story in Korea. You know, Netflix Chef Table profiled a Buddhist chef named Jung Kwon about 5 years ago. And so this kicked off this kind of global interest in temple cuisine, which is, you know, plant-based cooking. It eschews a lot of astringent herbs like garlic and ginger. And really, I love that episode. But what we wanted to do is look at temple cuisine outside of that fine dining lens. And we went to a temple in Jeollado, which I think is truly one of the best regions in Korea for food. And we went to a workaday temple. It was really just kind of a beautiful, beautiful space, but it wasn't touristy at all. It felt like we were just peeking in on how the monks were eating. And we woke up at 4 a.m. one morning, and we saw these monk chefs, more like just chefs. They weren't actual monks, and they were cooking for the monks. And we found this extraordinary cooking, and we have a whole section of plant-based cooking in Korea World. And one recipe that we loved, and we saw this when we were sitting there at like 4:10 in the morning, was a very, very, it was a cold broccoli salad. So you're just boiling some broccoli, shocking it in cold water, and you're dressing it with a tenjun, which is the brown tub you'll find at H-Mart, the bean paste. And it's dressed with tenjun and vegan mayonnaise and sesame oil and sesame seeds. And to us, it's such a beautiful combination. And really, we saw all these dishes. We saw persimmon kimchi as well on the table. And we tell the story in this essay about how at this temple, they're not cooking for cameras. There's no cameras in sight. This is how it's made every single day for the monks. And to us, that's an extraordinary thing, how this plant-based cooking is transcending anything we've seen in Korea. And we just fell in love with it.
Would you talk about the famous female divers?
For sure. Yeah, so in Jeju Island, it's a small island off the southern coast of Korea, and you got to go there. I think anyone listening who's been to Korea maybe has thought about going to Jeju Island. Many consider it the Hawaii of Korea. It's a tropical island, and the weather is amazing most of the year. And there's a long tradition of these female divers who go out into these treacherous waters, and many of them into their 60s, and it still today is a practice, even with modern technology allowing for more technical, seafood harvesting. They're out there diving for abalone, and abalone is prized, you know, in all of Asia. And so these beautiful abalones are being pulled out of these treacherous waters by mostly women. And there's a long culture of female divers, and it's a real matriarchy there. We write an essay. We went to the museum of the Hanyo. They're called Hanyo. And we found that there was a long tradition that went even before the war of women diving. And if you go to Jeju, you can get onto boats with some of these divers and kind of see how it's done. And it's just a remarkable, just another element of Korean culture that we cover in the book.
Is it dangerous? I mean, what they're doing?
John, it's extremely dangerous. No, it's absolutely, it's harrowing. You know, this is free diving. So this is, you know, slippers and, I believe sometimes there's scuba involved, but a lot of it's free diving and the waters are quite choppy out there. And it's just a culture. You'll find, you know, people diving for uni and abalone around the world. But in Korea, you know, you see these women, these really tough women. I've gotten to meet them through translators. And really, they have simple stories of just this generations of female divers. And, you know, it's, to me, such a special part of Korean culture that we cover.
It's absolutely remarkable.
Yeah, yeah.
We only have a few minutes left. There's so much to cover.
There is. Talk about the Taco Bell bibimbap.
Oh my gosh, I love that you called that one out. It's a recipe from a friend of ours named Dennis Lees, based in Chicago. And it's really a simple idea that Korean food can be presented in many different ways. And, Dennis is a Korean American, a terrific food writer. And he decided he wanted to create a Korean bibimbap bowl, rice bowl with namul and kimchi, but he wanted to use the cantina chicken bowl that's available at Taco Bell and kind of deconstruct that into a bibimbap. And I felt, that was pure, that's American Korean culture right there. It's Korean American culture at its finest, merging fast food with Korean flavors. And, Dennis's writing is very colorful, and I love what he does, and you should definitely check out his work. And we just felt like this represented a really creative way of presentation for Korean food in America.
I just did a grilled romaine Caesar salad last night for dinner with grilled corn. It was really terrific. And then while looking through your book, I saw a grilled kimchi wedge salad with creamy tofu dressing with bacon. I will be trying that, Matt.
You know what? When you take full beshu kimchi, like the cabbage, and you throw it on the grill for a few seconds and just scorch it up like you would do a grilled romaine, and then you've got this like tofu, this very smooth tofu dressing, and to me, that's a really great summer dish right there. And it's thinking about these kind of like really fundamental and foundational Korean ingredients, but a little bit of a spin and twist. In our book, it's full of these recipes that take Korean ideas and really what we covered in Koreatown, the real canon, and flipping it on its head a little bit, and this is a great example. Man, I wish that was at your house yesterday, John. I feel that would be a real treat. I hope your guests enjoyed your meal.
Me too.
The next time I watch a movie, it's going to be Kimchi Salt Popcorn. I really love that riff.
Oh, so kimchi salt is a beautiful thing. It's just the flavors of kimchi using gochugaru, salt, a little bit of citric acid, and put some sesame seeds in there. And we find that if you make kimchi salt, which will last forever, and you can have it on your countertop, we love putting it on many things. You can dust it on fried chicken. We have a great fried chicken recipe with that. But also, in popcorn, if you have kimchi salt around and you obviously pop it on the stovetop, that's the only way to do it. And you put a little bit of butter on there, and it needs a little extra. Nutritional yeast is common. We love using nutritional yeast. But for us, flip it into this kimchi salt recipe. And, citric acid, you can find that anywhere. It's really easy to find. It's a great great thing. We have a little MSG in there too, so I think it's a really good dusting for popcorn.
We're down to the last minute or so. We can't forget dessert, Matt. And I have a big wow next to banana milk cake.
Oh my gosh, Elaine Lau, she's a chef in San Francisco, works alongside Dukey at Neighbor Bakehouse, and this is her invention. It's really channeling the banana milk you're going to find in the AMPMs around Seoul and Korea. This is the convenience store chain. I think there's many Koreans have a real hierarchy of the flavored milks, but we all agree, the authors, that banana is the number one, and Elaine was able to funnel that into this beautiful recipe for a layer cake using bananas that are bruleed. And it's a really, I love this recipe. It's perfect for dessert.
Thank you so much for spending this half hour with John Ash and me. Korea World, a cookbook by Matt Rodbard, our guest this morning, along with his co-author, Chef Dukey Hong.
And a travel guide, too.
And a travel guide, too.
Yeah. Thank you. And your show is so wonderful. You are such skilled interviewers, and I hope your listeners appreciate what you put into your show. Such a fan of it, and I love what you're doing, so thank you for inviting me on.
Thanks for your time, Matt. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Back after this.